Masechet Baba Metzia Daf Lamed Zayin. The Mishnah mentioned the case where owner of a cow rents it to a socher, and then the socher in turn lends it to a shoel, and then it dies of natural causes, in which the socher says, oh, died of natural causes, I don't have to pay you, but the shoel does have to pay, and according to Tanakama, he pays the socher. So the socher does not pay the original owner, but the socher does collect the value from the shoel. Socher actually makes money from the deal. On that case, Amar Biyose Kesad Hala Oseh Sechora BeParator. Biyose said, how could it be that the socher will make a profit from the cow that belongs to the original owner? It's not his cow to make a profit upon, and therefore he thinks that the shoel should have to pay the original owner. Good. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Yose. Shmuel said, Halacha is follows Rabbi Yose. Amar le Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda le Rav Yehuda. Amar tlan mishme de Shmuel, haluk haya Rabbi Yose af berishona. Halacha kemoto o en halacha kemoto. So Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda said to Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda was the student of Rav who reported the first thing, and he said, you also told us in the name of Shmuel that Rabbi Yose disagreed also in the first case. The first case is the previous Mishnah before this that said, if you have a Shomer, let's say a Shomer Chinam, who decides, and the animal, he's holding an animal, and the animal is stolen. And he decides, you know what, I don't want to swear. I could swear, and that I was not negligent and get out of it, but instead, I don't want to swear, I'd rather just pay. If he pays, and then the thief is found, then the double payment of the thief goes to the shomer, and not to the original owner. And so you said, name of Shmuel, that Rabbi Yose disagreed with that Mishnah as well, because it's a similar kind of concept where the shomer is getting benefit from the cow of the original owner. And in that case, it's because he paid. So according to the Mishnah, the ownership rights, including the right to collect double, goes to the shomer, so he gets it. But Shmuel said that Rabbi Yose would disagree in that case and say, not so. You pay double, good, because you don't want to make a vow, you pay double. Doesn't mean that you own it. And according to Rabbi Yose, if the thief is found, he pays the double payment to the original owner. So now here's the question. Would you say, does Shmuel say, halacha is like Rabbi Yose, also in the earlier Mishnah, or not, maybe only in this Mishnah? Amar le, chaluk haya Rabbi Yose af berishona, v'halacha kimot af berishona. In fact, Rabbi Yose disagreed in both cases, and halacha is like Rabbi Yose in both cases. Itmar name, Amar Rabbi Elazar, chaluk haya Rabbi Yose af berishona, v'halacha kimot af berishona. That report was from Shmuel, who was from Bavel, and we have a similar report from Rabbi Elazar in Eretz Yisrael, who says similarly that Rabbi Yose disagreed not only in this Mishnah, but also in the previous Mishnah regarding the double payment of the Ganav, and Halacha follows Rabbi Yose also in both cases. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Modeh Haya Rabbi Yose Barishona Shekevar Shilem. Rabbi Yochanan, however, disagrees with Rabbi Elazar and with Shmuel, and he said Rabbi Yose agreed with the main Tana of the previous Mishnah because the Shomer already paid. By paying for the animal, that's it. I paid for you for the value of the animal. The Shomer acquires it. Now it's in the hands of a thief somewhere, but he acquires the rights to collect the double. And the Biyose would agree with Tanakama in that case that the Shomer gets it. Different from this case here, where a Shomer gives it to a Shoel, in which case the Biyose says the Shoel has to pay the original owner. Now we ask about this formulation of Rabbi Yochanan, Shilem in lo shilem la, v'hamar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo shilem shilem mamash, ela kevan shamar hareni meshalem, af al pi shelo shilem. When Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Yose agreed in that fit case because the Shomer already paid. So can we infer from that the Shomer only gets the double payment if he actually paid the original owner, but if he didn't pay, but he just said, I will pay, not good enough. But we have a tradition in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that we learned about already extensively, that when Rabbi Yochanan says, when the Mishnah says paid, it doesn't mean literally that he actually paid. It's sufficient for him to express his intention. I intend to pay and I'm not going to swear, even if he didn't pay yet. and the thief is found, he already gets the double payment. The transfer already happens. So how does that fit with what Rabbi Yochanan said over here? Shekivar shilem? And the answer is, Ema modeh haya Rabbi Yose berishona shekivar amar hadeni meshalem. You're right. Fix up the language that we quoted Rabbi Yochanan as saying. Instead, change it to that Rabbi Yochanan taught, that Rabbi Yose agreed with the Tana of the earlier Mishnah, because the Shomer already said, I intend to pay. Even if he didn't actually pay, that is sufficient. That's a different case than our case of the Socher that gives it to a Shoel. Good. No Mishnah. Amar lishnayim gazalti lechad mikem mane v'ni yodea eze mikem. Oh, aviv shel echad mikem efkid li mane v'ni yodea eze hu. Noten laze mane v'laze mane shehoda mipi atzmo. If someone says to two people, listen, I know that I stole something from one of you, $100 from one of you, but I don't know who it was. How could that be? I don't know. Maybe there's two lockers that two people have in the gym. And it says, listen, I want to admit he wasn't caught, but he's coming to admit on his own. I went into one of your lockers and I took $100 from one of your wallets, but I don't remember if there was this locker or that locker. I don't know. Or if a person says, listen, one of your fathers gave me a deposit of $100 to watch, but I don't know which one. And let's say the two fathers died. He's going to the son, so the fathers aren't around to say it was me or it was me. And so he wants to make good on this, and he doesn't know which one it was. In the first case also, it doesn't seem that the victims know which one it was either. And so he says, listen, I want to make good on it. So what should he do? He has to give 100 to this one and 100 to that one. Why? Because he admitted from his own initiative, he admitted it, he wants to make good, he wants to come clean, and therefore he doesn't know himself who he stole from or who he took a deposit from. So to be sure that he's giving back a full amount to whoever deserves it, he has to give double. All right, if you're going to be a thief, at least make pay attention to who you stole from. That way, if you make teshuvah, you don't have to pay double. Next case, shenayim shefkidu etzel echad, zemane vezematayim. Ze omer sheli matayim, ze omer sheli matayim, noten la zemane vela zemane, vashari hemunach ad sheyevo Eliyahu. So let's call this the second case. Case number one is two subcases, and case number two is two people deposit something with one shomer. One of the people gives him $100. The other says, can you watch this $200? And then they come to collect it. But it's not clear who gave the 100 and who gave the 200. Each of the people giving says that, oh, I gave the 200. The other one says, no, I gave you the 200. And I guess the Shomer doesn't remember which is which. So here's what he does. He gives each of them only 100 because they all agree, right, that everyone agrees that they both get at least 100. And they only are contesting the second 100, right? The Shomer has 200 that he's holding. He has 300 altogether that he's holding. 100 for one, 100 for the other. So what is he going to do with this 300? Everybody agrees that 100 goes to person A, 100 goes to depositor B, but the other third 100 is what's contested. And so therefore he should leave it, right? He can keep it himself. Others say the Betin will keep it. So he leaves it until Eliyahu comes, which is a way of saying until some proof comes. Maybe one day there'll be a witness that will show up and say, oh, actually, I was there. I know who it is. Otherwise, you just leave it. Amar Rabbi Yose, imken ma hifsid ramai. Rabbi Yose, this is all part of the Mishnah, says, I don't agree with this because then what did the swindler lose? Ela kol yemunach ad sheyevo Eliyahu, rather that let all 300 be left on the side until Eliyahu comes. In other words, these two depositors, depositor A and B, they know whether they gave 100 or 200. One of them is telling the truth that he gave 200, and the other one really only gave 100, but is claiming 200. So Rabbi Yose says, if you give each of them 100, then the thief who really only gave 100 is got 100 back, and so he's happy, and so he loses nothing by lying. Well, except that he's a liar, but besides that, he loses nothing monetarily by claiming to have 200. He's like, oh, I claim 200. He got his 100. He's happy. Therefore, Rabbi Yose said, if you want to have an incentive for the liar to admit, don't give anybody anything. Say you both get zero. And that way, the person who really gave the 200, He's not going to settle for 100 because he's deserving 200, right? He would rather not get anything than admit that he only has 100 and then get only what half of what he deserves. So he'll stick it out. The thief, however, what's the point? What is the thief gaining? The thief, he deserves 100. And now by lying, he gets zero. So he's going to think to himself, what's the point? I'm lying and I get zero. All right, you know what? I'll tell the truth. I changed my mind. Now I realize I gave the 100. And that way he'll at least get his 100 back. Right, he's not gonna lie and lose out on everything. So Rabbi Yosef says we need to give an extra incentive for the swindler to admit, and therefore all 300 have to be go into escrow until someone admits or some other proof comes up. All right, that's all case B. V'chen shene chelim echad yafe mane v'echad yafe elef zuz. Ze omer yafe sheli v'ze omer yafe sheli. Noten et hakatan l'echad mehen u'mitoch hagadol noten d'me katan l'sheni v'ashar yehe monach ad sheyevo Eliyahu. So now we have a second case within... we can call this case one, A and B. One is Gezel and one is Pikadon. It's important to keep these straight because the Gemara is going to talk about all of them. So case one, A and B, Gezel and Pikadon. And then case B are both Pikadon, but the first one is regarding money, cash. And case two, B, is regarding vessels. So two people deposit vessels with one Shomer. One of them gives a nice expensive vase. Then one gives a cheap one. The cheap one is worth only $100. The nice expensive Lalique one is worth $1,000. So each of them come to collect their vessel, and they both say, mine is the expensive one. And the other one says, mine is the expensive one worth $1,000. So now what are you going to do? According to Tanakama, you take the small one worth $100, give it to one of them, either one, doesn't matter. And the big one, sell it for $1,000 and give $100, whatever value the little one is, give it that to the other guy. In other words, you give them both an equal amount that's uncontested. They both agree that everyone deserves at least $100. So give that out. And then the rest of the $900, put that on the side in escrow until Eliyahu Hanavi comes, or until someone admits, or some other proof comes. Amar Rabbi Yosef, imken ma'ifsid haramai, ela kol yehem munach ad sheyevo Eliyahu. Rabbi Yosef says, same thing. In this case, the swindler doesn't lose anything. He really gave the $100 vessel. So he gets the $100 vessel, and now he has a claim. Maybe he'll get the more expensive one too. Or maybe they'll come to a car, he'll give him half of it, whatever. So he doesn't lose anything out. He has no incentive to come clean. Therefore, better to put both vessels into storage until that Amai says, oh, instead of lying and I get zero, I may as well tell the truth and at least get what's mine. Good, that's the Mishnah. Gemara. Alma misifeka mapikinan mamona vela amrinan oki mamona becheskat mareh. From the very first case in the Mishnah that we called 1A, we can derive that when we have a doubt regarding who money belongs to, we remove the money from whoever has it. And we do not say, leave the money in the possession of its current owner. The Mokim HaMonah B'chaz Mareh is the same as saying, HaMosim HaVero Alav HaRe'aya. That would be the principle that whoever currently has it, leave it in the status quo. If there's any doubt, unless you have absolute proof that it doesn't belong to him, in which case you extract the money. So usually we assume okay mamone bechizkat mare, and if we would apply that in the first case, remember the first case is someone who robs one of two people, but he doesn't remember who he robbed. So what does he have to do? The Mishnah says he has to pay both of them. Right? I don't know who I stole from, and he has to give $100 to possible victim A and another $100 to possible victim B. If we said okay mamona bechaskat mare or hamosim ha'avero alav ha'raya, then either one of the victims would have to prove that he was the one stolen from. He'd have to say, look, I have a receipt, I had $500 and now I have $400 in my wallet. And so therefore I'm the victim, and then he could take the money. But here, neither of the thief victims can prove that they were stolen from, and yet the thief has to pay both of them. So you see, when there's a sefek, we remove money from someone and we make him pay. Okay, so that's the principle we learned from case 1A. But here's the problem. What mean he shenaim shehifkidu etzel echad zemane vezematayim zeomer shili matayim vezeomer shili matayim noten lazemane velazemane vashari emunachad sheyavo Eliyahu. In case 2A of the Mishnah, where two people gave a shomed money to watch. One gave 100, one gave 200. Each of them claim, I gave you 200. No, I gave you 200. What does he do? He gives each of the 100 because everybody agrees to that. And the third 100, which is contested, he keeps for himself, and we leave it there until Eliyahu comes. If you would apply the same principle as in case 1A, then we should make the shomed pay both of them 100 because he's not sure. I don't know if I took the 200 from you or the 200 from you. He should have to pay both of them 200, but we don't say that. We say, let them bring a proof, and otherwise the money stays with the shomed. Why don't we say here also, since there's no proof who he stole from, so then the thief should keep the money until one of the victims can prove that he was the real victim. Amar le pikadon a gezel karamit gezel da abad isura ken asura banan. Pikadon de la abad isura la ken sura banan. And the answer of the sages is, are you comparing a deposit with a thief? When it comes to the thief, he violated a basic prohibition, do not steal. So he deserves to be penalized. The rabbis penalized him, says, you stole, you didn't remember who you stole from. And so now, you know what? Because you came, I mean, thank you for admitting that you stole. You shouldn't have stolen in the first place. All right, at least you admit it. You want to come clean? Then you have to pay both of them. It's your fault you don't remember who you stole from. You violated something. So that's why we say you have to pay both out of safek. Whereas a pikadon, the shomer didn't violate anything. He simply accepted a deposit from two people. And okay, he didn't keep track so well. That's not a violation. That's not a prohibition. And so he doesn't deserve to be penalized. So in that case, the contested amount he keeps until one of the depositors can prove that he was the one that actually gave 200. Okay, good. Now that we resolve that, let's continue. Vidame pikadon a pikadon, vidame gezel a gezel. There's two more contradictions that we're going to bring up. One involving two cases of a deposit, and another two cases that speak to a stolen item. Pikadon a pikadon te katani resha. O aviv shel echad mikem hifkid esli mane v'eni odeya ezehu v'noten laze mane v'laze mane would mean he shenayim shehifkidu. Now we're going to bring a contradiction between case 1b of the Mishnah and case 2a. Case 1b is a pikadon where two men gave one of two men gave something to a shomer to watch. These two guys died. And so now the shomer comes to the sons and says, the father of one of you, they died, maybe they're away on a trip, doesn't matter. The father of one of you gave me something to watch, but I don't know which one it was. So there he gives both of them $100. Because even though only one of them gave him. And so here he has to pay two out of pocket, even though it was not a case of something stealing. He didn't do anything wrong. There was no isur. So here he has to pay out of safek. And so that's a challenge to case 2A, where two people deposited money with him, one 100 and one 200, and he only pays each one 100, and the other 100 he keeps for himself. He doesn't have to give both of them 200. So how are you going to explain that contradiction? Amar Rava Resha nasa kemi shehifkidu lo bishne kirichot. Hava le lemedak. Sefa nasa kemi shehifkidu lo bekerich echad. Tela hava le lemedak. Kegon dafkidu tarvayhu beadeh hadadeh bechad zimna. Damar lehu antkufayhu la kapditu hadadeh ana kapedna. Rava explains that the Resha, meaning 1B and 2A, are talking about two different cases. In the Resha 1A, that is a case that would be like a case in which the two depositors gave him things at two different times. It's like that. In fact, in that case, only one of the father of one of them gave them something. But that would be equivalent to a case where you have two depositors and one comes on Sunday and says, hold on to this. And one comes on Monday and gives them something. Someone else comes on Monday and gives them another item. And in that case, the shomer should have been careful to see, oh, the money I got on Sunday is from person A. So the money I got on Monday is from person B. This one was 100, this one was 200. It's the shomer's responsibility to keep track of who gave him what. And that's therefore, if he forgets who gave him what, then he is responsible. And then so the resha would be the same, even though it's only one person that gave him, but now he doesn't know who gave him a deposit. And he himself forgot. The fathers aren't around. So he should have kept track who he received it from. And he has to pay both of them. That's different from the sefa. The sefa is the same as two people who gave him a deposit together, wrapped in one, where the shomer is not responsible to keep track of which one is which. For example, they gave it to him together at one time. Person A and person B, both depositors, they showed up at my door exactly the same time. One was depositing 100, one 200. You know what they did? They put it together into one bundle and they gave me the money all together, right? And then one said, I'm giving you 100, one I'm giving you 200, but they paid the money all in one shot. So now the shomer does not have to keep track of which one is which. He says, you yourselves were not suspicious of each other, right? It seems you came together, you bundled your money together. Obviously, you trust each other, so that's why I was not suspicious. You guys yourselves weren't careful to distinguish between your own monies. I don't have to distinguish between your monies either. I know I'm holding 300, and this is for the two of you, so I should be able to just give back the 100 to you, the 100 to you, and if you and you figure out among yourselves who the last 100 is, and I'll give it to you. Otherwise, he doesn't have to pay. That's the difference between the case of the resha and the case of the sefa. Good, we resolved that one. Now, v'damei gezel agezel. Katani acha amar lishnaim gazalti echad mikem, mane v'eni yodeya eze mikem. O aviv shel echad mikem yifkid li mane, v'eni yodeya zehu, noten laze mane v'laze mane. The one side of this contradiction is going to be case 1A. We quote the whole case 1, even though it's only the beginning that's relevant to us, where a person says, I stole from one of you. I stole $100 from one of your lockers. I don't know which one it is. We quote the case of the father also, but that's not relevant. Murminhi, here's the contradiction. From a Mishnah in Masechet Yevamot. Gazal echad mechamisha, ve'eno yodea eze mehen gazal. Ze omer oti gazal, ve'ze omer oti gazal. Maniach gezela benehem, umistalek dibre rebi tarfon. Alma misifeka, lama pekinan mamona, v'amrina noki mamona bechizkat mare. And the Mishnah Yevamot says, if someone stole some money from one of five people, but he doesn't remember who he stole from, there's five lockers there. He took money, $100 from one of them. He doesn't know. So each one of the five says, it was mine. He stole from me. No, he stole from me. And the third, he stole from me. All of them are claimed because they want the money. So what is he going to do now? Does he have to pay each one? No, Rabbi Tarfon says he takes the $100, he puts it down in the middle of the floor, and he leaves. And then he says, listen, I returned the money. It's up to you to figure out who the money is. One of you is telling the truth. The other four are lying. It's not my problem. I'm returning the money. And then if the wrong person takes it, he's now a thief. And that he fulfills his obligation in that way, according to Rabbi Tarfon. In that Mishnah, as we're going to see in a second, Rabbi Akiva disagrees and says, no, he has to pay all of them. But let's focus on Rabbi Tarfon now. So we can see from this that when there's a safek, we do not extract money, but rather we say we leave it in the possession of the owner. And therefore, even though each of these five is saying, you owe me, well, this is safek. You're the one that's owed? Prove it. If all five can prove it, yeah, then he'll have to pay all five. But really, he only has to pay one of them. He doesn't know who, so he doesn't have to pay all five of them. He put the money down, and that's good enough. So now we have a contradiction, because in the Mishnah, it gave a similar case just with two people, where it says, I stole from one of you, I don't know who it is. Over there, it doesn't say he could put the money down and let them fight over it. There, he has to pay both potential victims. But here, he only has to pay once. So this is a contradiction. And sir, So we ask, how do you know that our Mishnah here in Baba Metzi'ah is the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon? Maybe it's in fact the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, just like Rabbi Akiva says in Yevamot regarding the five. He has to pay five hundreds to each one of them, and that would fit with our Mishnah as well. And our Mishnah therefore could be Rabbi Akiva, not Rabbi Tarfon. And the answer is, no, we said regarding that Mishnah in Yevamot that even Rabbi Tarfon would agree that if the thief said to two people, I stole from one of you and I don't know who it is, that he has to give 100 to this one and 100 to that one. That's the language of a baraita that is said for sure by Rabbi Tarfon. The language of this baraita is exactly the same as the language in our Mishnah. And therefore, that proves that you can't say our Mishnah is only the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah's case is also the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, because Rabbi Tarfon agrees with Rabbi Akiva regarding this case of two people. So therefore, we're back to our contradiction. We have a contradiction here. Whereas in our Mishnah, in Baba Metzi'ah, and in this Baraita, the Bitva Tarfon says when there's two possible victims, then he has to give each of them 200. But in the case of five possible victims, he just puts 100 down and he says, you figure it out. Well, what's the difference between two and five? Well, it shouldn't matter how many there are. And the answer is, Hatam deka tab'ile hacha be'bala set yedei shamayim. Taikaname dekatani shehodam epi atzmo shema'minam. The difference is, in the Mishnah in Yevamot regarding five people, that's where the thief did not admit. Look at the language there. He stole from one of five people. The thief doesn't know who he stole from. But he didn't come to admit. He's home. He's like, I'm keeping this money. And then the five different people come and say, he stole from my locker. The other one says he stole from my locker. So in that case, where the thief did not admit that he stole on his own, so they each come and say it was from me. There, he only has to put 100 down, and he's done. Whereas our Mishnah in this Baraita, look at the language. It says, that's where he comes on his own and admits, because he wants to fulfill his obligation to heaven. If you want to really fulfill your obligation to heaven, then you have to pay everybody. And if it was five people or 10 people or 20 people and you don't know who it is, then you have to pay all of them. If you really want to fulfill your obligation, laset yedei shamayim, that's why in those cases he has to pay everyone. As it says, hodam mipi atzmo. But if he did not admit, and now there's just a legal claim for his legal baseline claim in front of Betin Shamata, not Betin Shamala, he says, I stole 100? Okay, here's 100. And then you figure out who it belongs to. Good. Amar mor, hatam deka tav'ile. Now, we're going back to that case of the Mishnah, where the five people come in and claim, you know, I was the one that you stole $100 from, and we know one of them is right, but we don't know which one. V'hala mato'en. The thief in that case, what is he claiming? Because he did not admit that he stole in that case. So what is his response when each one comes and says, it was my locker that you stole from? Rav Yehuda marav hala shotek. Rav Matana marav hala soveyach. Two interpretations of Rav, two students of Rav. Rav Yehuda says, he's quiet each time. It says, you stole from me. He doesn't say anything. Whereas according to Rav Matana, he screams back and says, no, I did not. I didn't steal from you. And he says, no, I didn't steal from you. Now, mandamad hala soveach aval shetika kehoda'a. O mandamad hala shotek shetika dehacha lav kehoda'a u hu. Matze amar le, hay deshetike lechol chad vechad amina dilma hay hu. According to the opinion that says that the thief was screaming back at them, no, I didn't steal from you, I didn't steal from you. But if he was quiet, then we would apply that shetika kehoda'a. If you're silent, someone comes to you and says, you stole from me, and you're quiet, and you don't argue back, then we have to take that as an admission. So we only say he has to pay back only 100 to put it in the middle of the floor, when he denies each of them. But if he was quiet, then he'd have to pay all of them. Whereas the other opinion that says he was quiet this whole time, so that opinion would say being quiet in this case does not mean that he's admitting to it, because he could say, okay, you know why I was quiet for each one of them? Because I wasn't sure. When Mr. A comes and says, you stole from my locker, I don't know. I know I stole from one of the lockers. I don't remember myself who it is. So I can't deny him. Doesn't mean that I know it was his locker. So that's why I'm quiet. And person B comes and he says, you stole from my locker. I can't say, no, it wasn't, because maybe it was. But I can't admit it because I don't know. Maybe it wasn't. So that's why he's quiet. The fact that you're quiet in such a case does not mean that you're admitting guilt. So this is an important principle, and so you have to look at the context. Sometimes by being quiet, that is an admission of guilt, but sometimes there might be another reason why a person is quiet, right? I'm waiting for my lawyer. Doesn't mean that you're admitted to it. It just means that you don't want to talk for whatever reason. Good. Amar mor. Manech gezela benhem umistalek. Now, Rabbi Tarfon said in that case that he puts the money, $100, down, and he leaves, and he fulfilled his legal obligation. Now, what about the rest? What happens with it? Is everybody going to just take it? Everybody takes $20, and they leave, and that's it? But then the rightful victim doesn't get his $100. So how is that? How is that fair? After all, I've made a principle that, let's say you come and you see an iPhone on the table or something. You're not sure if this is a lost item or the owner put it there on purpose. Maybe he put it there on purpose and he went to another room because he wanted to take a break from his phone, but he knows where it is. Now, if I take it to return it, he comes back and says, oh, where's my phone? So I'm not sure if this belongs to someone who knows it's there, or maybe it is a lost item and I should take it. Anytime you have a sefek, then l'chatechila, leave it there, right? Assume that the person did not forget it. But if you already took it, then you don't have to return it. If it's an item that has no siman, say, right? Not a phone, maybe, let's say, just money. Maybe someone put the money there and he knows it's there, he's going to come back for it. So l'chatechila should not take it. But if I already took it, then I don't have to return it. So the same thing should apply in this case. Here we have this $100 that the thief has in his hands. He doesn't know who it belongs to. Okay, so he shouldn't have stolen it in the first place, for sure not. That's stealing. But now that he has it and he doesn't know who it belongs to, and nobody has a proof that it's theirs, so he should keep it. He should be able to keep it. So why does he have to put it down for everybody to fight over? And so Rav Safra answers him. Rav Safra, v'yaniyach. You know what? You should read the Mishnah not as maniach, he puts it there, but yaniach, he should deposit it, meaning deposit it in front of a court or keep it in his own possession and wait until someone brings a proof. It doesn't mean he throws it on the floor and they all fight over it and take 20, because that wouldn't be fair, because then the original victim, the real victim, would not get his 100. So not maniach, but rather yaniach. And so he says, listen, until one of you proves that you were the victim, I'm just going to hold on to it, because that would be the same as a lost item where you already took it. You shouldn't have taken it. It was stealing in this case. But now that you took it and there's no proof, there's no claimant that can prove that it's theirs, so then you keep it until someone comes along with proof. Amar le Abaye le Rava, mi amar Rabbi Akiva lo zo haderech mosiato mide avera ad sheshlim gezer lechol chad vechad alma misefeka mapikin mamona velamrinan okim mamona becheskat mare. Okay, now back to that Mishnah in Masechet Yevamot. Abaye asked a question to Rava. Did Rabbi Akiva really say that to the Bitarfon, no, you cannot remove yourself from sin by just putting $100, whatever it means, depositing $100 and saying, someone, whoever proves it, can come and prove it. That was what Rabbi Tarfon said. No, Rabbi Akiva said that the thief has to pay every one of the five potential victims. Okay, so what do we see from that statement of Rabbi Akiva? That we do extract money out of doubt, and we do not say, leave the money in the status quo where it is. We do not say, and that the thief can say, okay, you prove that you're the victim. No, we say, listen, any one of these people could be the victim. You have to pay each of them 500. That's what Rabbi Akiva said. That's what it seems to imply. Here's the problem. We have another Mishnah in Masechet Baba Batra, a tragic story. What mean he? Nafala bayit ala ve'al imo. House fell down and killed a person and that person's mother, a mother and a son. Now, what is the family worried about? Who gets the house? Who gets the property of the mother? Who deserves it? So there's two claims. Yerusha ben omerim ha'em met rishona, ve'yerusha em omerim ha'ben met rishon. Elu ve'elu modim she'yachaloku. So the children of the son, that's the grandchildren of the mother, they say, grandma died first. They fell in a house. We don't know. It happened in an instant. So we don't know who actually died first under there. But anyway, they claim, they say maybe, grandma died first. And that's good for them, because if grandma died first, then her son would be, who's still alive under the rubble there, bleeding out. But he would inherit his mother at that point. And then when their father dies, they would inherit both their father's money and their grandmother's money. And so they get everything. However, the grandmother's family, they claim that the son died first. Once the son dies, okay, fine. His own property goes to his sons. They don't care about that. But they care about the grandmother's property. This is the grandmother's brothers. So they say the son died first. He's out of the picture. And therefore, when she died, she had no direct heirs. We are the closest heirs, right? A brother is going to inherit first before a grandson. And therefore, all of her possessions go to us. So now, nobody knows what the truth is. Nobody saw who died first. So what do we do in that case? Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai agree in such a case that they split it, right? The grandchildren and the grandma's sister split the assets of the grandmother evenly. Rabbi Akiva disagrees, and he says that I think in this case that that it should all go to a chazakah, its current status. Rambam explains that the current status means that it goes to the grandmother's heirs, the grandmother's family, because they are for sure heirs, whereas the grandchildren may not be. It depends on whether that son was alive or not, so they may not be heirs at all. Okay, so you see that in this case, where you have a safek, we do not say, well, remove money because of safek. If you said remove money, well, I don't know whose it is, so you know what? Then they would split it. But we don't say that. We say, leave it the status quo. Let the grandchildren come and prove their case if they want to take any money from the grandmother's brothers. So we have a contradiction. In this case, he says, in the Mishnah Yevamot, Rabbi Akiva says, you remove money, and he has to pay all 500. And in the case of Baba Batra, he says, leave it in status quo. So what's the answer? Amar le, hatam shema v'shema, gazal echad mechamisha bari v'shema. In the case of the fallen house, nobody has a certain claim. Each one says, maybe the son died first. The other one say, maybe the mother died first. So since we don't know, you leave it as is in the status quo. Hamosim achavero alav hara'aya. But in the case where one person stole from five people, the victims each say, I know for sure you stole from me. The other says, no, it was my locker. Their claims are definite. The thief doesn't know which one. He says, maybe, could be you, could have been you, I don't know. And so a bari, a certain claim, is stronger than an uncertain claim, and that's why he has to pay each of the 500. Whereas if none of them, nobody was sure in that case, let's say, I don't know if it was my locker, maybe it was, nobody knows whose locker it was, but it was one of them, then you're right. Then it would be Shema v'Shema, and you'd say, Hamosim echavado alav haraya. But if it's Bari v'Shema, he has to pay all five of them. V'hamatnitin d'hachad d'amar lishnayim, gazalti lechad mikem mane, d'shema v'Shema hu v'katane noten laze mane, v'laze mane. So now we have a question on that answer, because our Mishnah here in Masechet Baba Metzi'ah says that if someone went to two people and says, I stole from one of you, and I don't know who it is, and those victims, they don't know either, because none of them claims, no, it was me, the other one says, no, it was me, and yet you still have to pay both of them. Why should you have to pay both of them if it's Shema v'Shema? Why don't you say, Masu Michaver Olav Ha'aya? And so we answer, so wait, how do you know our Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva? Maybe it's opinion, our Mishnah is not the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. And the answer, the Katani Allah Dehi, Moder Bitarfon Bamel Shnaim Gazati, Lachad Mikem, Maneve Niodea Eze Mikem. The man Moder, Lad Rabbi Akiva, Bar Pilukte, well, because on there we saw the Braita that we read already, that Rabbi Tarfon agrees, even though Rabbi Tarfon generally says, that you can just put money $100 and you don't have to pay $400. But he agrees in a case where the thief admits and says, I stole from one of you, but I don't know who it is. In that case, he has to pay both. He has to pay $100 and another $100. It says he agrees. Agrees to whom? Obviously, he agrees to Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, we see that Rabbi Akiva, and that's that case of that Braita, is the same as our case in Mishnah Baba Metziah. And therefore, our case of Mishnah Baba Metziah is agreed upon by everybody, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. So we have a problem because, once again, this is a Shema V'Shema case. And then our Mishnah says he has to pay $100 to both of them. Whereas in that Shema and Shema case of the house that fell down, it says that you leave it in status quo. And so we answer, Umimai de Shema v'Shema hu chada de la ka tane tob in oto ve'od ha tane b'chiya ze omer en yodea ve'ze omer en yodea. So wait, how do you know that in the Mishnah is a case where everybody is uncertain? And the answer to that is, first of all, because this is our Mishnah in Baba Metziah, there's no claimants. Unlike the one in Yevamot of the five people, in Baba Metziah, it doesn't say they each claim, I'm the one that you stole from, I'm the one you stole from. So obviously they don't know. And furthermore, Rabbi Chiya has a baraita about our Mishnah that says explicitly, this one doesn't know if he was the victim, and that one also doesn't know that he's the victim. So you see that our Mishnah is a case of Shema v'Shema, and the Mishnah Baba Batra about the house falling down is also Shema v'Shema. How can you explain the difference that Rabbi Akiva has for each of them? And the answer is, Ha'okim nala bebala set yedei shamayim. No, our Mishnah Baba Metziah here is talking about a case where the robber comes forth because he wants to fulfill his obligation to heaven. That's why he has to pay 100 to you and 100 to you. He wants to fulfill all his possible obligations. Nobody should ever hold a grudge against him. And that's why he has to pay 100 each. From the letter of the law, for the human court, in fact, since it's Shema V'Shema, we would in fact say, Chazakah, leave the money where it is until someone proves that it belongs to them.
Amar le Ravina de Rav Asher, Umi amar Rava kol bishte kirichot hava le lemedak.
Now we're going back to a point that we made earlier, and so Ravina asked Rav Asher, did Rava really say that if two people deposited something with a shomer separately, like we said before, one on Sunday, one on Monday, then the shomer is responsible to keep track of who gave him what? Is that true?
V'amar Rava, v'ite ma Rav Papa, hakomodim b'shnayim shehifkidu etzel ro'eh, shemaneach ro'eh b'nehen u'mistalek. Rava himself, others say Rav Papa, but assuming it is Rava, said that everyone agrees that if two people deposited animals with a shepherd, and let's say one deposited one animal, and the other one put two animals there, and then the shepherd didn't keep track, and he doesn't know which was which, so he could just put all three animals there, leave them, and he could leave and go away. And it's not his problem. He does not have to pay everyone. He does not have to keep track. He doesn't have to give both of them two animals. So we have a contradiction, right? Because here, as we presume, they deposited it separately, and yet he does not have to keep track. And the answer is that this case that I was talking about with the shepherd is where they deposited it without his knowledge. They just left it there and went away without informing the shepherd, here, I am giving you one or I am giving you two. And that's why the shepherd had no obligation to keep track of what each person, even though they gave him at different times, but they didn't tell him, here, I'm giving you this. So that's why he was not obligated. But if they came to him and said, here, I'm giving you two sheep, then he does have to keep track.
וכן שני חלים, אחד יפה מנה ואחד יפה לבזוז וגומד וסריחה.
How come in the Mishnah, in part two of the Mishnah, we had 2A was about two people that deposit money, $100, and the other one, $200 is one case. And there he says you give each 100, and one and the other third 100, you leave an escrow. And then the second case was, and also two vessels, one worth 100 and one worth 1,000. Why do we need both? It's the same principle in that case as well, where you give the small vessel to one person, you sell the other one, take $100 and give it to the other person, and the other $900 leave an escrow. Same principle. Who cares?
Diash minan hach kamaita, bahi kamri rabanan mishum deleka peseda. Ava behadi ka peseda de gadol, ema modu le rabbi yose.
Because if I only had the first case regarding the money, I would say in that case, Rabbanan say that you give one 100, the other 100, and the third 100, you leave an escrow, because there's no loss of the money. Eventually, if and when we find out whose it is, okay, we get the other $100, and then one will have 200 and the other one will have 100, as is fitting. But in the case of a vessel where there is loss to the large vessel, because you're going to have to sell it and it won't be here anymore, and so then the guy who owns the large vessel is going to like, oh, but now you sold it, I get the monetary value, but that was my grandmother's, she gave it to me, I wanted that vessel, so there is a loss. We might have thought that Rabbanan would agree with Rabbi Yose. Says in that case, don't sell it, rather both vessels put in escrow, put away until someone proves it. We might have thought that, and that's why we need the second case, that Rabbanan would say, yes, you sell the vessel, even though there will be a loss of the physical item. And if I only had the second case, I might think that Rabbi Yose says, put everything in escrow, only a second case, because it's an actual vessel that we don't want to sell and get rid of. But in the case of where it's just cash, then they might agree with Rabbanan that you give one 100, the other 100, and then only the third 100 you put in escrow, because there's no loss. And so we need the Resha to teach me that Rabbi Yose would say, even in the Resha, that we put everything in escrow. We challenge that last point.
No, Biyose gave his reasoning. He said, we're going to put everything in escrow because we want the trickster to admit. And so we're going to penalize everyone until the trickster admits. And that would apply in both cases. So really, we don't need both cases for the Biyose.
So we agreed to that. I say, Ela tarvayu d'rabanan istarich velo zo af zo katane.
You're right. For the Biyose, one of the cases would have been sufficient. But we do need both of them for Rabbanan. And really, you could have had only the second one and I could have figured out the first. But the Mishnah sometimes is structured in a not only this, but even that structure. So really, the first one is superfluous. But it likes to put this case. Here's a chidush. Even bigger chidush is the second one. If you only had the second one, you could have figured out the first. But the Mishnah likes to teach things step by step. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen v'amen.